This is the last lecture in the biodiversity unit. It's lecture 8, called Kingdom Protista, a kingdom for all the leftover organisms. I begin with the question, Kingdom Protista, an artificial group? Well, if a eukaryote is not a fungus, not a plant, not an animal, then what kingdom do we place it in? Well, there's only one kingdom left, Kingdom Protista. And if you actually look at Kingdom Protista, most of them are unicellular. You probably are familiar with Paramecium, amoebas, these organisms. Maybe you looked at them under the microscope in a previous bio class. Some are multicellular, like the brown algae, the giant kelp that we'll see at Catalina Island. That's actually in the Kingdom Protista as well. In fact, it turns out that if you look at all the different kingdoms, it turns out that protists are more diverse in structure and function than any of the other organisms in the other kingdoms. In fact, the only thing that actually unites all protists is the fact that they're eukaryotes. Pretty much it. Now, the evidence from the evolutionary history of all living organisms, we call this phylogeny. It shows that Kingdom Protista is actually an artificial group. So I've drawn a picture on the board over there. It looks like a tree. And this was a picture that actually Charles Darwin came up with, and he published in The Origin of Species. And the reason he did is because it's a great metaphor for the history of life. Because if you look at the trunk of the tree right at the base, let's say that represents the origin of life 3.8 billion years ago. And then as time continued, life began to evolve and branch into many, many, many branches. And so at the very top of the tree, that would represent the present time. And along the way, you'll see that some branches don't continue. That would be organisms that went extinct. And then eventually, up at the top, those are all the organisms that are still living. But if you trace them, you can trace their origin phylogenetically all the way back to an original ancestor. And so you might think of that, that's a phylogeny, where you link everything back together, sort of the family history, the evolutionary history of all living organisms. It's very much like a genealogy that you might do for your family, right? Except a genealogy just shows all your relatives. But this shows all your relatives too, but it goes all the way back to the very beginning of life. So a phylogeny, an evolutionary history that you see here, is sort of like a genealogy on steroids, you want to think of it that way. Okay, so if in the next slide, what you'll see is the evolutionary history of protists. And what you're going to find out is that protists are not what we call a monophyletic group. Can you all say it for me, monophyletic? And so the word mono means one, and phylo refers to tribe or race. And so monophyletic means one tribe or one race. And there is not one common ancestor that's unique to only organisms in Kingdom Protista. And let me contrast that. So if we look at animals, and if you look at my little illustration here, you'll see animals actually have a common ancestor from which all animals evolved. It would be right there, and everything that evolved from that one animal is considered an animal. So animals are monophyletic. If you look at fungi, there is an ancestor to all fungi, and all fungi are therefore monophyletic. They're in one group. They had one ancestor. And if you look at plants, plants had an original ancestor right there, and all plants are therefore monophyletic. But where things get a little more confusing is if you look at protists. Now look at protists, and you'll see that there's a whole bunch of different lines that come up from this main branch, and they're all now included in Kingdom Protista. we say that kingdom protista is not monophyletic. It's polyphyletic. What does poly mean? Many. So it has many lines of origin, not one single ancestor. Because even if you went here, let's say down here at the base, and you said, well, there's the ancient ancestor of all protists, and you would say, well, that's good, yeah, because there and there and there and there. But oops, look it. Animals, fungi, and plant would be included. So protists are monophyletic. You can't find just one single origin of all protists. So really, it's not a natural group. It's an artificial group of organisms, and that's my point. So let's look at their nutrition. Some protists are photoautotroph. In other words, they have chloroplasts and they make their own energy. And an example of single-cell organisms that do this are the diatoms. Can everyone say diatoms? Diatoms are found in both marine and freshwater environments, and we're actually going to see these at Catalina Island. We're going to look under the microscope at plankton, and we're going to get a real close look at them. They're very cool to look at under the microscope. There's also multicellular organisms like brown algae, and we're going to see kelp on Catalina Island as well. So we're going to see the extreme of protista at Catalina. We're going to see single-cell examples of protista and multicellular huge examples of protista. And impress the counselors there, the instructors there, by remembering this stuff, and they'll go, ooh, wow, Los Gatos High School. Great students. Okay. Another form of nutrition is, heterotrophic nutrition, and many protists will eat other organisms. A great example is the didenium, which is shown here eating a paramecium. So one protist eating another protist, and there it is finishing off the protist, just sort of almost about to lick its lips. Oh, they don't have lips, but you know what I mean, okay? Also, amoebas, shown here, can use their pseudopodia, their false feet, to capture food and then eat it. Oops. And then, And then the stentor is another organism pictured here, which has cilia that beats and causes organisms to come down and get captured into its gullet and draws food into its gullet. The different ways of eating. Another form of nutrition is called mixotrophs. The word mixo refers to mix, troph refers to food, and these are known as mixed feeders. And these protists can be either autotrophic or heterotrophic. It just depends. They can do both. And euglena is a great example of this. Euglena is green because it's got chlorophyll, therefore it can photosynthesize in the presence of light. However, if it's in the dark, no worries, it can just eat stuff. And so it can be heterotrophic if it's in the dark. So it can go either way. It can be autotrophic or heterotrophic. There are three main ways these single-cell protists can move. One is through pseudopodia, these false feet, and you see a picture of an amoeba moving to the right here. Also, you can have flagella, which they're either usually found singular or in pairs, and they undulate back and forth, and they cause this organism pictured here to move to the right. And then the example, of course, is euglena. And then finally, you can have cilia, which are smaller versions of, they're not big like flagella, they're smaller, and they beat back and forth, and by undulating back and forth, they force this organism to move to the right. They're all unicellular, yeah. And what's interesting about cilia and flagella, as you can see in the next slide, is that even though they look very different, ones, flagella are very long and cilia are very short, if you actually look at them internally, you'll see that they're pretty much identical. They're constructed in what's called a 9+2 architecture using microtubules. These microtubules are simply long proteins, and they come in pairs. So there's 9 pairs on the outside here. If you count them, you'll count 9. And then 2 single microtubules in the middle. And And so cilia and flagella look identical inside, but they're much different outside. Finally, in the last slide, we're going to see how protists are found in our aquatic ecosystems. It turns out that they have a fairly low species diversity. They actually represent only about 10% of the named eukaryotic species. However, they are highly abundant. And if you take, for instance, a single teaspoon of pond water, it can contain over 1,000 protists. It's amazing. And if you actually look at a food pyramid, which I have illustrated here, you'll notice that the photoautotrophic protists are at the base of the food pyramids, the base of the food chains, in both freshwater and marine environments. So they're super important. They provide the foundation of both freshwater and marine ecosystems. And then the next level up, you'll see heterotrophic protists. And my point here is that without protists, most aquatic ecosystems would collapse. So they're very, very critical in our world.